everybody has different triggers and they are living in a different psychological framework. And so different things relax different people. You know, for some people it might be vegging out, for others it might be going for a run. It's variable. I think what we have found that is always helpful for people once they can learn how to do it is the biofeedback.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So what if I told you your body has the secret language? And if you could tap into the secret language of your body, you could unlock a whole new way of accessing and utilizing your brain. You could decrease your stress levels. You could actually even increase the length of your life. Well, it's true. Your body does have a secret language, and it's called heart rate variability. Heart rate variability is not your heart rate. It's actually the distance between each of your heartbeats on average over a minute. And heart rate variability is something they discovered in the 1950s. And what they realized is that the higher degree of variability, the healthier your overall system. Since the 1950s, there has been a ton of research on HRV, and yet very few people actually talk about it. As a clinician, I've understood the value of HRV for a significant period of time, but have always been dissatisfied with the devices available on the market to actually measure it. Until now. We've been talking about this on Instagram and through some of our newsletters that for all of our new patients coming in and our existing patients, we have this cool technology in our practice called the Leaf. And the Leaf is an HRV monitor, not just that you wear when you're meditating or breathing, but that you wear all day long. It gives you a sense of how your body is actually responding to the stresses it faces in real time. Well, today I am sitting down with the CEO and founder of Get Leaf, and we are talking not only about his technology, but his past as a neuroscientist, how he came to wanting to execute on this idea that he had about giving people access to this new language within their system. Rohan Dixit is an entrepreneur. He is a neuroscientist, and as I mentioned, the founder of Leaf. And today I am joined by him on a really fascinating conversation about HRV and the secret language that exists in your body. You're not going to want to miss it. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Rohan Dixit. Rohan Dixit, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm super stoked about the conversation that we are going to have today, because one of the things that we have been feeding out and sharing with our audience lately have been these amazing little devices that we are giving to all of our new patients, and they are called Leafs, not the kind on the tree, but the cool biohacking device that talks about heart rate variability. And you are the CEO and founder of Leaf. And so we're going to get into what that technology is. We're going to talk about heart rate variability. We're going to totally go there in terms of biohacking. But can we first back up, and can you give all of our listeners a bit of background on who you are, and how did you become an entrepreneur, and how did you get so interested in this field?
So my name is Rohan, and my background is actually in neuroscience. So for a long time, I studied meditation, mindfulness, and how it affects the brain. And all that kind of came out of, I mean, I guess if we're talking about deeper motivation, being a stressed out, anxious kid, and finding mindfulness really helped me. And Leaf, this biohacking tool, this smart patch, kind of came out of the research and also my initial experience with mindfulness and how helpful it was. And basically, you know, it was sort of this desire to teach people how to learn mindfulness in a way that was data-driven and quantitative.
And have you always been an entrepreneur?
I have not, no. So I started out as a scientist and just kind of tried by failing as an entrepreneur.
I feel like that's kind of everybody's story as an entrepreneur, is that It's like fail, 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 success, fail, 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 success. And before we get into really what The Leaf is all about, can you take us through the journey of this company a little bit? Because I first heard about you guys, I found your booth at the Bulletproof Conference probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I thought, this is so super cool. And I signed up for your crowdfunding campaign. And then I didn't hear anything for a while. And then all of a sudden I got this package in the mail and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. But like, what happens behind the scenes from being at an event like that and then getting all of that initial funding and all of the different pieces? Because our audience are entrepreneurs. And I think sometimes having the back end of the story is so interesting. It gives people insight in terms of what to expect.
Absolutely. So we had never made a hardware product ourselves. And The Leaf is this ECG patch, this electrocardiogram. So it's kind of a complicated technology. And, you know, we actually, when we met at the Bulletproof Conference, we're making our devices ourselves in our garage in San Francisco. So
it's like an urban legend that really happens.
Yeah, our landlord wasn't happy about it, but it ended up working out. And so, and it turns out that, I mean, as a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in the hardware space, will find, what works at a small volume is very different from what will work when you need to make thousands of devices, right? Or thousands of, you need to have thousands of customers versus just a few. And so what we realized was our techniques for manufacturing weren't scalable beyond, you know, small volume batches, which is what we were doing. And so we actually went to China. We moved to Shenzhen, China, which is kind of like the Silicon Valley of China, and lived there for almost a year, worked with the factories and figured out how to produce our thing at scale. And came back last year in 2018 with the product and shipped it out to people. And that was kind of the launch of the product.
Did you fund that foundational part of your business through crowdfunding?
We did, yeah. So we actually did a Kickstarter.
So cool.
Where we raised, about $400,000 and got a ton of interest from people who, I mean, the Kickstarter community is great. And they support people who are, you know, have an idea, have a passion, and don't exactly know how to do it. And so it's been an incredible gift, really, to get crowdfunded.
And what has been your biggest learning to date? I mean, there's the science side of things, but in terms of running a business, what is it you're like, whoa, I learned this really, really quickly?
I don't know that I learned every lesson quickly, but there's definitely a ton of lessons to be learned. So, yeah, I mean, so last year really was the first launch of our consumer product, and it's the Leaf Smart Patches for stress, stress and wellness. And this year we've kind of, you know, towards the end of last year and this year, we're actually now announcing this new product, which is more of a clinical product and an FDA medical device. And so that transition from, you know, the business economics of running a consumer hardware business to a medical device business is a little bit of a challenge and a steep learning curve. And so that's been really, that's been something that we've been learning as we go. And definitely a big change.
Okay, so take us through, because people are like, okay, we've got this journey, we've got this hardware, we've got this cool device. What is The Leaf?
Yeah, so The Leaf is a ECG smart patch that measures your heart and your breathing, and it tells when you're stressed out. And when it does, it automatically turns on and it guides you in these vibrations that teach you how to breathe in the optimal way. And that way is called heart rate variability biofeedback. And so it actually teaches you to change your body so that you can change your mind when you're feeling stressed out.
Can you tell people what HRV really is?
Absolutely. So HRV is an acronym for heart rate variability. And what that means basically is just, you know, in a very scientific kind of dry way, the timing between your heartbeats and that variability is actually really good for you. And it's a sign of a healthy heart. It's a sign of an emotionally adaptive and resilient nervous system. And it turns out, you know, your heart and your mind are connected. And so when your mind starts to get really stressed out, anxious, things like that, it has an effect on your heart and you can actually pick it up in your heart rate variability or HRV.
Yeah. And one of the things and one of the reasons that we're using it with our patients is, I mean, we work with entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs get stressed. And I find when you're kind of heads down and building something out, you're not always aware of what's going on in your body. You're not always aware of those cues. And where we have found it really helpful with our population is people are coming back to us and they're like, I had no idea that X, Y, or Z were actually triggering stress for me. And people were finding that there's very distinct patterns to the types of stresses that are triggering them. I'm curious, and I'll share with you some of the things we're seeing. Have you seen distinct patterns that stress that are stressing people that you didn't expect?
Yeah, you know, we've definitely learned a ton from our users, and we've even learned a ton from ourselves too. I mean, we wear the leaf every day in our office, and yeah, there are tons of things that you don't realize are stressing you out or that are kind of below the level of conscious awareness, and that includes people too and situations that you wouldn't expect.
Very personally, I was wearing my leaf, and what I would find is every single day at 4 o'clock, it would move into like the full red danger zone. It would start buzzing, and it was like, it was alerting me that I was getting physiologically stressed. And I was so confused by this because I thought, oh, my day is winding down. And I like, where is this coming from? And I realized I would move into these danger zones every time I was transitioning. So I would be transitioning from work to heading off to the daycare to picking up my kids. And it was the transition from wearing one hat to the next that was really triggering for me. I would find the same thing in the morning going from home and then into clinic. Once I got into these things, I was totally fine, but not necessarily right at that transition zone. And it wasn't a huge shift that it took for me. It was literally 16 seconds worth of breathing, and I could bring my HRV level right back up. In fact, I could be like in my total zone of flow. And that was where the power of this device came in. I had no idea that I was using stress capital at those moments. It was such a cool opportunity.
I'm so glad it's been helpful for you. And yeah, I mean, having insight into those moments and then being able to do something about it is what we're all about.
Yeah. So have you collected some data on some of the fastest ways to increase your HRV levels?
Yeah, so we've collected almost a billion heartbeats from users at this point, which we think is the largest database of its kind. And we've learned a ton. Everybody has different triggers, and they are living in a different psychological framework. And so different things relax different people. You know, for some people, it might be vegging out. For others, it might be going for a run. It's variable. I think what we have found that is always helpful for people once they can learn how to do it is the biofeedback, the heart rate variability biofeedback. And what that is basically, you know, feeding back this HRV biosignal to you in real time and then letting your body learn in this amazing skill called biofeedback how to actually control it through your breathing and through your mind. And that tends to be really effective. And as people get better at that skill, they can use it in increasingly short doses, like you were just saying, you know, for just 16 seconds.
So how do you do that? Like, what is that technique for people who are like, oh yes, I would like to lower my stress in 16 seconds. Like, when you talk about doing that biofeedback, what is it that you get people to do?
It turns out that when you're relaxed and you breathe in, your heart rate will actually go up. And when you breathe out, it'll go down. And so when you're relaxed and you're breathing in, you're breathing out, and your heart rate's going up and down in this beautiful wave pattern. And that's called respiratory sinus arrhythmia, which is like a long word for just basically meaning that your body's in a flow state. And what we teach people to do is actually make that signal of your heart going up and down really tangible and real through a vibration pattern that you feel directly on your body. So you don't need a screen. You don't really have to disengage from what you're doing, but you can feel tactile in a tactile way what's happening with that biosignal and actually change your breathing pattern and use your mind through biofeedback to make that body pattern happen that your brain then associates with being relaxed. And because our mind and our body are in this loop and they kind of feed into each other, if your body starts to get really relaxed, your mind will actually pick up on that cue and start to relax as well.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, this idea of, okay, well, I need to do breathing. They're like, I know. What else can you do for me? And I find in practice, we talk about these foundational elements. You've got to be able to breathe. You've got to get outside. You've got to move. You got to drink water. And everyone is looking for these fancy dancy interventions in terms of their health. But fundamentally, learning how to connect to your breath and controlling your heart rate variability is so influential on your health. Can you just speak to a little bit what some of the I'm reluctant to say disease states, but let's talk about it. Like, some of the consequences and outcomes of having consistently low heart rate variability, what are they linked to?
Really quick to your first point, it's it's so true how just the simple basics, breathing, drinking water, exercising, how helpful, how incredibly helpful those are. And so, you know, definitely want to reinforce that point because the tools are available for all of us here. I think, you know, in terms of consequences for having low HRV, low heart rate variability, we use our device with all kinds of people. People who are stressed out, athletes, entrepreneurs, as well as patients who are sometimes really sick. And the interesting thing about heart rate variability or HRV is that it actually tracks not only your mind but also your body. And so heart rate variability, and this is how it was discovered in the 50s, is actually a sign of all-cause mortality. And so, for example, if you have really low HRV, that may be a sign that you are entering end-stage renal disease. That may be a sign that you have one of any number of diseases. Low HRV is associated with cancer, heart disease, obviously, and a whole host of other chronic health issues. And so tracking this particular biomarker is actually really helpful, not just for optimizing your wellness and specifically your mental wellness, but also your physical well-being. And so it's kind of a mind-body indicator.
Yeah, I find it really valuable from that perspective on a clinical level is just to get an assessment of someone's baseline HRV scores. And what I have noticed, because at any given moment I'm wearing several devices, is my HRV is different depending on what device I'm actually wearing at any given time. Does every device have its own HRV scale? Is there some sort of standardized scale that we should be looking at? It's a question I also get from my patients.
So every device should not be different. And there are different ways to measure HRV, different algorithms that are used in the science. The most common is what's called RMSST, which is just a particular type of algorithm to calculate HRV. I think, you know, we spent a lot of time, the reason that our device is like a patch that you put on your body and not just something on your wrist is because we really wanted to invest in having an accurate marker of heart rate variability because there's such minute changes between one heartbeat to the next that you're measuring. If you can't measure that accurately, it's kind of like garbage in, garbage out. You can't really do much with that data if it's not collected in an accurate way to start with. And so my guess is that, you know, and this is borne out in some of the research with particularly wrist-worn trackers that use optical sensors to measure HRV. It's just hard to do. It's you know, it's a noisy signal out there on the wrist. And so, yeah, I mean, that could be part of it.
Yeah, I suspect that's it. So it's either the device is measuring things at the end of my arm or I've got my leaf on and my HRV is infinitely higher on my leaf than my other devices. So naturally, I like to look at that number. But it is interesting and it is really valuable. Is there a set scale that we should be looking at?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, RMSSD or root mean successive differences is kind of like the most used time series algorithm. I mean, this is getting super wonky, but just to go there
Let's
for
go
a second.
There.
Yeah. So that's kind of your most common time-based algorithm for HRV. If you look at frequency-based measures, so you can basically kind of like your brain has different frequencies like alpha, gamma, et cetera. If you look at the frequencies of your heart, you can actually kind of pick out frequency bands like that as well. And so for people that are using a frequency-based approach, you can do certain bands like high frequency and low frequency heart rate variability.
Right. Because I feel like at the end of the day, patients are like, is mine good? Or is it not good, right? Like that's the fundamental that they are looking to address. And I do love that about your app. Like you can really see in sort of a color-coded way how you are doing with respect to your HRV at any given time.
Yeah. One of the things we really tried to make an effort to do is because everyone's starting at a different level of HRV, we tried to make sure that each device personalized to each person and kind of gave you a baseline for where you were at and then let you improve based on that versus saying, oh, hey, your HRV is really bad and it will just always be that way. And even if you work with the biofeedback and get healthy, drink water, get exercise for like weeks and months on end and your HRV improves a little bit, you're still red. And, you know, that's just not very motivating. And so I think one of the things that entrepreneurs have to take into account, especially in the health tech space, is just the habit design and the motivation element of interacting with your customers and building apps and devices.
Have you found in terms of baseline scores for people that aside from breathing, that there is a lifestyle change that is most highly correlated with an increase in HRV? Or conversely, like some consistent lifestyle choices that you're like, man, it's gonna be really hard for them to get that up even with breathing.
Yeah. So recently we were actually in Texas working with a clinic there who has patients that are really sick. They have end stage renal disease. They're on dialysis. You know, once you're kind of at the end stages of renal disease, just so people know, it's not a great prognosis. You know, a lot of people end up passing away within, you know, 2 years is kind of the average. And so what we found there was that really low HRV was predicting mortality in the patients in this clinical population that we were working with. And when you're really that sick, there's not a lot that you can do because you can't move around a lot and it's hard to do the breathing exercises as well. And so there are, I think, certain situations where your body's just so sick that it's really hard to move the needle. But I would honestly think for the vast majority of people, it's probably 90% of us, you know, we're on the spectrum, and there's always a possibility to take where you're at and start to push it slowly and consistently in a better direction. And you just need that kind of feedback to get the right data and the motivation to actually do it.
And is there like, have you found that there's anything that makes a difference? Like if someone's exercising versus not exercising, you're like, oh yeah, the exercisers have a higher baseline HRV.
Totally. So exercise is a huge one. Doing the breathing exercises more frequently is also a really important one as well. People always say breathe when you're stressed, right? But it's not really clear how to breathe. I mean, that sounds a little reductive because, okay, obviously we're all breathing if we've made it this far. But there is an optimal way to breathe that actually changes your heart rate variability. And that's, I think, the key thing that people can learn, especially with a device like ours, but I mean, there's other ways to do it. You know, once you can kind of internalize that skill, then I think, you know, we have people who put the breathing mode on all day, and the more you do something, the better you get at it. And so whether it's exercise, whether it's mindfulness, I think building those habits into your life and then kind of being consistent about them is really the whole game.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things our clinicians have found is that we all sort of subscribe to this idea, and it's easy to teach with our patients, is this idea of box breathing. So in for four, hold for four, out for four, and literally till you've like pictured going around a box. And that's worked very quickly at bringing people's HRV, up. And the other thing that some of our clinicians have found is getting people to chant. So literally chanting Om, which will have an influence on breathing. They have found that that brings people's HRV up faster and higher than breathing alone. So just some like interesting little things that we've started to observe.
Totally. I mean, it's such a fascinating science. I think, you know, a lot of this ties back into the vagus nerve, which I don't know if, you know, if that's something that's being, it's not as widely known and understood here in the United States yet. But, you know, for example, one of the things that we realized with tracking HRV and in building this device is that when you're exhaling in particular, your heart rate is dropping. And the way that your heart rate drops is by this nerve called the vagus nerve turning on. Are you familiar with the vagus nerve? Do you guys use that in your
100%. We talk about it with our patients all the time. So I was going to ask you about sympathetic, parasympathetic state. So you beat me to it. Let's keep going down this rabbit hole.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a huge lover of the vagus nerve. And so I think,
listen to the neuroscientist. He's like, oh, great. Like we're in my zone now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like as a neuroscientist, you're always thinking about the brain, but it turns out there's a huge connection with the heart and it happens through the vagus nerve, right? And so what I love teaching people about the vagus nerve is just your breathing actually kind of recruits your vagus nerve. And your vagus nerve is a really helpful way to enter states of well-being. And you can activate it through breathing, particularly on your exhales. And so you mentioned box breathing, where you're kind of breathing in, holding, breathing out, and it's all equally spaced intervals. What we found that's actually really helpful, and then later realized is also something that's in kind of the Buddhist and yoga traditions of breathing exercises, is actually extending your exhale. And the reason for that is that as your exhale gets extended, when your heart rate is dropping on those exhales, hopefully, your vagus nerve is actually activating. So you're getting more and more vagal activation on every exhale. So if you're breathing and you want to really relax, I think this may be kind of what's happening when your patients are chanting OM, you're able to, when you're able to extend that exhale, you're getting a ton more vagal activation and it just makes you feel really good.
Yeah, well, that makes sense too, because one of the things that we're always assessing for in our patients is, are we seeing parasympathetic or sympathetic dominance? And for people who are like, what are we talking about? Sympathetic nervous system of the autonomic nervous system. So the parts of the nervous system that you don't really control. The sympathetic is your fight or flight. It's like how you feel when a police car turns its lights on behind you. Like you literally feel that in your heart. The problem is most of us are breathing so shallowly. I know you know this, Rohan. I'm talking to our audience. And we breathe so shallowly throughout the course of the day that we literally hold our body either in or mimicking that sympathetic state. And so what you're talking about is really how do we very quickly activate the opposite end of that autonomic spectrum, which is engaging the parasympathetic side of the nervous system. And that's where we are highly creative. That's where our flow state exists. That's where all the really cool stuff that all the biohackers and entrepreneurs want to access. That's why this is a really cool technology for this group in particular. That's not a question. That's more just a statement. Neuroscientists, pipe in here.
Love it.
Do you guys look at that? Do you look at other markers of parasympathetic versus sympathetic activity when you're starting to contextualize the data that you guys are receiving?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you said it so beautifully, I think, in laying out the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. A lot of times this can get to be too much for people. There's like a lot of new terminology and, you know, it's hard to know how it connects to you. But what we've focused on, you know, just to answer your question, is kind of using a machine learning approach and throwing in a little bit of AI to look at a deeper level of quantitative analysis beyond kind of the frequency bands that have been studied over the last few decades. But I think, you know, when I talk to people about this and I talk to my friends about this, because I mean, I know that Megan, you know the importance of breathing and you teach your patients that all the time, but I'm always trying to teach myself as well, right? Like, I mean, I started this thing because I have anxiety and I needed to get better and I still need to get better at breathing. And, you know, I think we're all in this boat, you know, together in a way. And so just for me and when I'm talking to other people about this, it really does make a difference. You know, you don't have to know all of these different terms to know that, okay, I need to know how to breathe. This is how you do it. After a while, you can learn how to internalize that skill and then, you know, take that out with you and use it when you need it in the world. You know, you don't need to wear a device for the rest of your life. These are things that are life skills that you can take wherever you're going and in whatever situation you find yourself in. So I just feel it's really helpful for people to learn them.
It's super awesome. I mean, I know how to breathe, but it doesn't mean I do it all the time. And the other thing I find so fascinating about the leaf is I don't necessarily wear it every day, but if I have a significant change to my routine or I'm taking on a new project, that's when I really like to wear it. I like to see how a new environment actually is triggering my nervous system. And the more I wear it, and like you were talking about before, the more consistent I am, the less fluctuation I start to see, which I think really just speaks to this idea of physiological resilience.
Absolutely. And I love that our bodies can learn how to do this without needing the device, like without needing a thing that you have to, you know, rely on all the time. And so it's kind of like training wheels, right? I mean, mindfulness is that way. At the beginning, you need some help staying balanced. But once you know how to ride your bike, you can take those wheels off and you don't need anything anymore. And I think empowering people is really important, especially when thinking about kind of the capitalist model, or even in some cases, sadly, the not your healthcare model, but for example, sometimes healthcare in the United States ends up kind of becoming this way for various reasons, where we're just kind of throwing pills at the problem, or, you know, getting people dependent on things that where there's not really a way for them to take efficacy and control. And I feel like this is one of those few places where you can actually have an incredible impact on your own health and well-being just by learning this skill that is then yours, you know?
Well, it's so true. And listen, I mean, our healthcare system loves to just throw pills at problems as well. But this notion of agency, I find so, so helpful and interesting. And the thing is about all of these different trackers and gadgets and Apple Watches and the whole thing is that people often ask me, they're like, well, what do I do with the data? And I find even as a clinician, a lot of times I'm like, it's cool, but it's not necessarily actionable, where what happens with the leaf is it's actually actionable data that we are getting from people. And I really appreciate that. One of the areas where people are looking for data and things that they can act on is actually in supporting and aiding sleep. Are there correlations or interesting things that you have learned with respect to HRV scores at night and people's ability to sleep?
So fascinating. So there's a ton of research now. Some of it has just come out in the last year that shows that your HRV levels during your different sleep stages actually correlate with different predispositions to mental health disorders. And so there's a ton there. I think, you know, in general, tracking your sleep quality, making sure that you're getting enough sleep, that your sleep environment is optimal, is really important for optimizing your HRV and also just in kind of making sure that you're living a healthy life.
Okay, I'm going to start to collect data for you because I'm super interested in how how dark people's rooms are and how that correlates to HRV levels. I'm definitely seeing in practice that people who have a propensity towards waking at night, they certainly have lower HRV scores during the day, but we're seeing the same thing when they're sleeping overnight. So it's really fascinating. I don't think we have a ton of information on the science of it yet, but it'll be neat to start to see some of the initial correlations that we can pull together.
Absolutely. Check it out. I mean, you can kind of see your sleep cycles, like they're about 90 minutes, right? You can almost see them in your HRV data when you look at it the next day. Yeah, I just put my device in airplane mode and check it out. And when I wake up in the morning, turn the Bluetooth back on and check it out. And yeah, there's definitely some interesting stuff there. I've learned a little bit about myself.
Well, it is such a fascinating subject matter. Are there other things, Ron, that you're like, this is super cool, we totally didn't touch on it? Or like, is there other cool stuff that you just want to share with people about your device?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because we're in the clinical space now. And, you know, one of our CTO actually just a few weeks ago is wearing a lab coat, you know, walking around and in a clinic. And it's just funny because this project in Entrepreneurs Will Relate to This started in such a different place than where it's ended up. For me, this whole thing kind of began with taking a bunch of equipment with me, heart rate tracking equipment, brain sensors to the Himalayan mountains, and searching for monks that I'd been studying in the lab, trying to figure out, you know, what is it about meditation that we can kind of understand, turn into a system, and allow people to learn on their own without, you know, traveling to meet monks in the mountains, you know, somewhere in some exotic country. And so I lived with Himalayan monks for like almost a year, recording their brainwaves, their heartbeats, learning how to meditate with them. And, you know, that was really the basis for Leaf. And it's so funny to see kind of really those super ancient techniques that we all know kind of help us, mindfulness, meditation, contemplation, and just bringing that into the modern world. It's a trip. And it kind of goes back to something that one of our mentors said, Richard Gewurz, who's one of the founders of HRV Biofeedback. He always tells people that it's a brand new technology that's 2,000 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, it's so true, you know. And there are just these themes that have been true throughout human history, and recognizing them and bringing them into the modern world and updating them, you know, for the way that we live now can be so helpful. And yeah, I think that's interesting to share.
I love the way that our body really does have all of these systems and layers of feedback. And sometimes it's just a matter of tapping into them. And I really feel like that's what you guys have done. We've all heard that mindset has a huge influence on our ability to be effective and amplify in this world. But what if I told you your brain biochemistry, literally the neurotransmitters that are existing within your nervous system, can help amplify your mindset or your capacity to be effective? They can help accelerate your mission in the world. More and more with both my coaching clients and my patients, we end up having a conversation related to our own ability to control our nervous system through the optimization of neurotransmitters. Now, what the heck do I mean by this? The foods that you eat, the way that you think, your interaction with the world has the capacity to increase things like serotonin or dopamine, some of these really important neurotransmitters to helping you be effective and operate at your best. After listening to literally thousands of conversations with my clients and with my patients, I pulled together a very quick checklist so that you could have a better understanding of the things you're doing every single day to amplify your nervous system or downregulate it in a way that isn't necessarily serving your mission. If you want access to this information and want to learn a little bit more about how you can optimize your brain health for success, visit meganwalker.com/brainhealth to grab your handout now. Now, back to our episode. This is an awesome place to transition to the second half of our interview. And I call this our KPI section. So just like we have KPIs or key performance indicators in our business, I think we also have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got a few rapid fire questions to throw your way if you're ready.
Awesome.
Your challenge will be to maintain your HRV throughout.
I'm tracking it.
Done. Ron, who is inspiring you right now?
Mahatma Gandhi and is really inspiring me now. I've been listening to a lot of and reading a lot of the speeches and written work that he did.
What is your audacious goal for the next year?
My audacious goal for the next year is to get 10,000 people to learn how to use the right breathing techniques through the leaf, and then not need us anymore.
I like that. I will see what I can do to help you with that. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
This has not always been true, but the one thing that I make time for every day is a little bit of mindfulness.
How much time do you set aside?
So we started kind of doing this together at about 5 minutes a day, and now I take about 20 minutes.
It's awesome. It's baby steps, right? A little bit at a time.
Baby steps. That is true.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know, besides meditating with monks, which is
right.
Cool.
Totally. I don't know if there's anything totally badass. I'm a boxer. Is that badass?
Yeah, that's badass. I like that. What do you do for fun or play?
Gosh, you know, like I said, I love martial arts. I love boxing. I love running. I'm also really into democracy technology. And so I've been working on some things in that space as well.
Wait, did you say democracy technology?
Yeah, I did. So we're starting something here in the United States called the Internet Party, which is a way for people to vote on what's happening in their democracy through their smartphone.
I love that. I don't normally stop rapid fire questions, but I was like, oh, I'm intrigued by that one. And finally for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Oh, the classic nature or nurture question. You're just throwing out the unanswerables. I don't know. Is that an okay answer?
Yeah, that's a totally fine answer. I respect the fact that you didn't pick a camp, because there are several camps in which people answer that that question. And I don't know, I feel like, is the most honest response from a scientist. Ron, you're up to so many awesome things. We certainly have your leaf in our clinic. But if people want to follow up and learn more about what you're up to, where can we send them?
Check us out at GetLeaf, GetLeaf.com. And thank you so much, Megan. It's been a pleasure.
Amazing. And we'll link everyone up with that link in the show notes. And we will also link you guys up with a discount code if you want to try the leaf out for yourself. Rohan Dixit, thank you so much for being here.
So appreciate it.
If you enjoyed today's episode, there's a few things that I need you to do. Head on over to wherever you heard about the Entrepology Podcast, Stitcher or iTunes, and leave us a quick review while you are there to subscribe. Now, we've had a lot of people ask us about how they access the leaf. And the first way you can do it is certainly by being a member of our practice or seeing one of our practitioners. But if you don't live close by to us, I want to give you the opportunity to try out this really awesome technology for yourself. Linked up in our show notes is not only a link to the Leaf website, but I also make reference to our discount code. If you use the discount code all caps, Dr. Walker, you'll get an immediate 20% off your purchase of the Leaf at checkout. In order to get directly to their site, go to getleif.com and use the coupon code Dr. Walker. If you want to link to it directly, you can go to our show notes and you can find those by heading to meganwalker.com/podcast/episode123.